Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio at www.blogtalkradio.com. Wednesday, March the 16th, 2022. Yes, it is Wednesday, the day before March Madness starts. Well, technically, March Madness started yesterday. I know. Nobody knows that better than me because I wasn't watching it, but I was checking my phone later last night to see the scores and stuff. So, yeah, March Madness is here, and we here at Hank Jones Poly Sports are ready to rock and roll and talk about it a little bit later. Meanwhile, that first song you heard was, of course, the theme from Harry O, one of my favorite shows way back when, and then, of course, the Iowa Fight song. You know what? Every day here at Global Patriot Radio, we got something good. 7 days a week, 7 shows a week, multiple hosts on some of them. Yep. Every Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. And then Tuesdays, Eric the Kaffir is in with the Cross and Crescent discussion, also 6 o'clock Eastern Time. 5:30s, of course, 5:30 Wednesday Eastern Time, me, Hank Jones. And then Thursdays at 6 Eastern Time, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays, noon Eastern Time, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturdays at 10 p.m., Minister Osama Dakduk, along with the beautiful Christie, with Revealing the Truth About Islam. That's going to be tougher the next couple of weeks because you got late games on Saturdays during March Madness. So kind of tougher. And then Sundays, Eric's back. Real Interfaith Dialogue, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday. I don't care if it's daylight time or not. It really doesn't matter. It's all the same. In spite of the fact that the Senate just hastily passed a resolution or a bill, so to speak, to make us permanently on daylight savings time, which is really stupid because it actually has to go before the states, and 38 states have to approve it, supposedly. I don't know. You see so much stuff out there about how it's supposed to be done. I mean, right now, Arizona doesn't observe daylight savings time. I think there are parts of other states that don't as well. I don't know. Where I've always lived, they've always observed it. So, you know, it's kind of cool when you're in a northern state in the summer and it's, you know, light enough to still be water skiing at 10 o'clock at night without the influence of alcohol. By the way, we just did it. Yeah, so, of course, you can come into the show, blogtalkradio.com. Find us under Live with Global Patriot Radio. You can always email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter and of course, calling in. If you call in 319-527-6706, that gives you the added bonus of raising your hand, which really means hitting the one, and then you can talk. If you're in the chat room, you can banter back and forth as Holger and Indy Hawk and the Alaskan are doing right now. Yes, they are. Tell you what, had some good calls with some of these guys. Actually, all three people in the chat room have talked on this show before. Then, of course, in the chat room, those three in the phones, we got Hawkeye Mike with his hand up already. He's going to be talking later, and Sue from New Mexico. Theoretically, later on, Brother Tommy and T. Bodie are supposed to be calling in. That's part of our March Madness discussion with the crew, the folks that you heard last fall talking football. We will be talking March NCAA tournament. And then, of course, in the house, Mrs. Hank is back and forth. And our adorable little Aussie, who has eaten. I'm looking for her. She's usually she's sacked out because she just ate. Oh, she's not sacked out. Oh, she's herding Mrs. Hank around the house. She's an Australian. Herd, H-E-R-D. That's what they do, Australian shepherds. They herd. She is a herding dog. She doesn't let you forget it either. She'll herd you out to the freezer to get her raw food. Always. And literally, like I said last week, we've been feeding her this way for a while now, and she still jumps up and down for her food every meal. just doesn't happen anywhere else in any other walk of life. Let's get to the obituaries. We got some real sad ones this week. Last Thursday, former Major League Baseball pitcher Odalis Perez died rather tragically. He had a fall at his home in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. He was on a ladder and fell. He was initially noteworthy. I had forgotten this, but I remember when it was talked about on SportsCenter. He was up briefly in the 1998 season with the Braves, not just barely long enough to be on their playoff roster. He got one decision in the regular season. He was 0-1. Then he pitched in the postseason, and he got a win. So he was the first pitcher to win a postseason game without having not won a regular season game. So Odalis Perez gone at 44. Friday, we lost R&B singer Timmy Thomas to cancer at age 77. Now, you remember, I'm sure you remember this. He did a song called Why Can't We Live Together? It had this long, drawn-out, I thought, introduction, organ and, like, bongo. Probably not that long, but it seemed like really long when you're a kid and you're wanting to hear something insightful, such as Yeah, 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 and Give It to Me, Baby. But, you know, long, drawn-out organ and bongo wasn't what we were looking for when I was a kid. Anyway, that got to number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 and number 1 on the R&B chart. Sold over 2 million copies. I mean, I remember the song. It was a very popular song, but it just sounded depressing to me. Saturday, the sister of Toni Braxton, her sister Tracy, passed away at age 50 of esophageal cancer. That's way too young. And then we also lost guitarist Barry Bailey. He was the guitarist for the Atlanta Rhythm Section. And also wrote and played at times with the Classics 4. And if you're wondering about a connection between Classics 4 and Atlanta Rhythm Section, if you remember, ARS did the song Spooky back in like 78, 79, but that was originally, of course, a Classics 4 song, who also did their biggest hit, Stormy, probably. Anyway, Barry Bailey passed away from complications of multiple sclerosis at 73. Man, I could listen to that song Champagne Jam all day. Consider it mandatory listening. If you're going to a good wine tasting, you should be playing that beforehand. I probably did listen to it over and over at times in college under the influence of whatever. Hey, Sue, Alaskan Boyd wants you to know he says hi. I'm relaying that. I am sure she says hi back, sir. I just, I can't tell right away. Holger says, Hank wishes I hadn't. I'm glad you found me on Twitter, because Holger's actually going to feature into this a little bit later. Got a couple of Holger items, actually, some good tweets he's got. Sunday, we lost actor William Hurt to prostate cancer. My wife is interrupting. He had a prostate cancer at the age of 71. He won the Best Actor Oscar for 1985's Kiss of the Spider-Woman. Now, I didn't think that was his best role by far, but he was also nominated for Children of a Lesser God and Broadcast News. Again, I did not think he was the best in Broadcast News. I thought Albert Brooks was far better, but it is what it is. But he did win the Oscar. He was also he came into his own in 1981 with Body Heat, and then he really gained traction in 1983 with The Big Chill, played the jaded, underachieving, and later drug dealing Nick, who had been a radio psychologist at one point. Remember, he said, I'm just trying to keep the conversation lively. Anyway, my big sister, who's listening in on the phones, she used to say, you kind of look like William Hurt. I don't, but, you know, be that as it may. We're going to skip to Tuesday. We lost former NHL defenseman Jean Potvin, or they would say Polvin, who, along with his brother Dennis, they were original members of the expansion New York Islanders. He was 72. Yeah, I remember that team in the Islanders. I mean, as a Blackhawks fan, I kind of thought that was going to be an automatic win, and it wasn't for long. The Islanders actually became a pretty good team, winning Stanley Cups by the 1980s. Okay, Monday, this was definitely tough. First, we lost former American sprinter Charles Cool Charlie Green. Cool Charlie usually ran with his trademark shades, He was a multiple NCAA champion at Nebraska. He tied the old hand-timed 100-yard dash record of 9.1. I believe he also ran an electronic 9.33. He won a bronze medal at the 1968 Olympics. You don't hear much about that because he was running behind world record setter Jim Hines. Charlie Green also led off the 4x100 relay team, which, of course, also set a record. That was at the elevated, as they say, rarefied air of Mexico City. But still, the dude was fast. I remember seeing film of him and stuff. I remember him coming on one time. Steve, if you remember a runner named Steve Williams, a sprinter in the mid-70s, late-70s, who was very injury prone. He should have made a couple different Olympic teams. In 1976, he was injured. In 1980, we boycotted. I remember Charlie Green one time talking about, you know, they were asking him, you know, who are the up-and-coming sprinters? And he said, well, the up-and-coming, or, you know, the sprinter that's here is Steve Williams. This poor guy just can't get a break. Well, Charlie Green also pulled a muscle in, I believe, the quarterfinals or semifinals in Mexico City. He had actually won the Olympic trials, and he'd run the fastest times through the heats in Mexico City. But then he sort of pulled a muscle, and so he just wasn't full strength. He finished third. But cool Charlie Green, man. He was cool. After he finished running track, he became a U.S. Army officer. He actually trained sprinters at West Point. And then from there, he served on the board of Special Olympics. He had several medical issues leading up to his death Monday. He was 76, man. Cool Charlie Green running his way through heaven. And then Monday, we also lost retired wrestler Scott Hall at age 63. He had broken his hip recently, and then after surgery, a blood clot developed and got loose, and he suffered 3 heart attacks. Passed away Monday after being taken off life support. And Scott Hall got his start in NWA Championship Wrestling in Florida, moved on to Central States, and then he joined Vern Gagne's Minnesota-based AWA. I'm sure Holger has been to some of those shows. Got to have been. And after winning and then subsequently losing the world tag team titles with Kurt Hennig, no less, he left the AWA due to the cold winters, he said, and then seeing that the AWA was on its way out. He hooked into NWA with Crockett Promotions in Atlanta as it was transitioning into Turner Sports and World Championship Wrestling. He left briefly for several international and independent promotions, and he returned where he was repackaged as Diamond Stud and managed by Diamond Dallas Page. And sometimes he teamed with a guy who would become probably his best friend, Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash was wrestling as Vinny Vegas at that point. Scott Hall then moved on to the WWF, where he rose to his eventual fame, being billed as Cuban bad guy Reza Ramon. The bad guy. He won the Intercontinental title several times. And then with Kevin Nash and Shawn Michaels and Triple H and then Sean Waltman, who goes 1-2-3 kid, 6, X-Pac, whatever, they became known as the Click backstage. And when Hall and Nash left the WWF for WCW, the Click actually embraced in the ring after their last match. And evidently Vince McMahon, the owner of WWF, owner was not real happy about that. It was on his return to WCW where Scott Hall, and then a couple weeks later being joined by Kevin Nash, they reached their ultimate wrestling influence and popularity. They billed themselves as the Outsiders, and then in a swerve, they united with longtime babyface Hulk Hogan. Hogan turned heel, and they became the NWO, New World Order. And, although the NWO became a quasi-joke when it blossomed into membership, it rivaled Spinal Tap's 37. I mean, really, I mean, they were adding people every week. But they were responsible for WCW taking over the famed Monday Night Wars against WWF and later WWE with the Monday Nitro. I remember WWF, WWE had that long time show, prime time, and then it became Monday Night Raw. Scott Hall went on to win several titles in both WCW and WWE. His only world title came in World Wrestling Council. He won that twice, 20 years apart, believe it or not. Remember, he appeared on ESPN's E60 show. It detailed an incident at an Orlando area nightclub in 1983. His friends said that led to his eventual drinking and drug problems. He was in an altercation, got into a confrontation with a guy who eventually pulled a gun during the struggle. Scott Hall eventually shot the man with the man's own gun. It was ruled self-defense, but he basically said he could never forget it. And his friend said the PTSD he suffered was always with him. He was eventually helped along in his recovery by Diamond Dallas Page. He had occasional setbacks, and he developed epilepsy and heart problems. Now, I ran across this guy a few times in the Orlando area over the years. I can also say he always had a smile. He was always friendly, very self-deprecating. I remember one time in particular, I was in one of those local college fan type stores that had, like, you know, UCF stuff and Florida and Florida State. And he was trying to find a UCF hat, and he was sort of laughing at himself. He said, "I got to find one that fits my huge head." Just a nice guy. He hung out at the Morrison's cafeteria, one at the old Winter Park Mall, if I remember. He lived outside Orlando for several stints during adulthood. But unfortunately, his alcohol and drug problems curtailed what probably would have been bigger success, both professionally and personally. Interesting, when you see his interviews across various social media, it's easy to see he really wasn't jealous of other wrestlers or with their success. He was quick to say that guys that came off as jerks and jackwagons, he often said, cut them some slack. They're just trying to make it further in the business, or they're just doing their jobs. Now, which isn't to say he never criticized anyone. That's not true. But he was really basically a good guy. He often said, you know, he was just doing his job. He was rewarded with entry into the WWE Hall of Fame as his Razor Ramon character in the 2014 class, and then as part of the NWO again in 2020. To give you an idea, though, of what a class act and a loyal friend he was, there is this story, which actually resulted in an arrest. At a roast of the Iron Sheik in 2008, some scumbag who calls himself a comedian got up and said that after getting caught doing coke with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Iron Sheik's career fell faster than Owen Hart. People know the circumstances of Owen Hart's death. If you don't, here's what happened. He fell to his death at a WWF event. He was being lowered to the ring in a harness. The harness broke. Owen Hart fell some 30 or 40 feet, did not survive. So this scumbag got up and said, you know, Iron Sheik's career fell faster than Owen Hart. Scott Hall and Owen Hart were friends. They'd wrestled together and tag teamed and everything else. It was a horrible tragedy. So this scumbag makes the joke, and Scott Hall, I guess, rushed the scumbag and broke a podium. He grabbed the microphone and just told him the joke was disrespectful. Now, I can't think of anyone who wouldn't agree, of course. But anyway, Scott Hall was arrested, and the scumbag's only response was to go on his MySpace page. By the way, I'll bet you that loser still probably has a MySpace page. And all he could say was Scott Hall was drunk, as if somehow that excuses such a classless and beyond tasteless joke. Anyway, really just a sad loss and a sad ending for a guy who had found at times brilliant success, but along with it, a lot of personal demons. I mean, I really feel for his family and friends, especially Kevin Nash, who has lost a friend and brother, and you can see it in some of his postings. Very sad. Rest well, Scott Hall. Meanwhile, in news, not one, but two Mittens Romney items today. First one, Mittens warns of extraordinary challenge to preserve U.S. democracy. He was at an event in Northern Virginia at a fundraiser, and he was talking about the fragility of American democracy. Now, according to five attendees, he told the crowd that he has a chart in his Senate office tracing the history of civilizations over the past 4,000 years, saying it's a reminder of how they can rise and collapse and how unusual American democracy is. Yeah, it's unusual in the fact that someone like you can be so duplicitous and still rise to the top, damn near the top. So he said we're the only significant experiment in democracy, and preserving liberal democracy is an extraordinary challenge. Mittens. Yeah, so he's there, of course, raising money for Liz Cheney, Congresswoman of Wyoming, who is grabbing her fame at the as part of the January 6th Inquisition. And then he went on to later accuse Tulsi Gabbard of treasonous lies. He said that may cost lives over Russia's Ukraine invasion. Really? Hey, Mittens, those lives were cost before Tulsi Gabbard said anything. He said that her remarks about the existence of the so-called U.S. biolabs would result in people being killed. Now, people are saying she served as a Democrat but has shifted to far to the right since leaving office. That tells this is a Yahoo article, so that what does that tell you? Far to the right, hardly. She has always been somewhat of a security hawk, having served in the military. So Mitten says, no, this is a treasonous lie. And this guy's talking about threats to democracy? Someone doesn't get it. Let's see what's going on in the chat room real quick. Yeah, DeHolger's dad went to college with Vern Gagne, and he thought Steve Williams was Tiger Woods' caddy. No, different Steve Williams. Yeah, Holger can't use a Holger on Twitter anymore, by the way. So if you're looking for Holger, you won't find him that way. No. Yeah, he's barred under that name. Anyway, yeah, so they got some good banter going. T. Bodie's joined in the fun. But yeah, Holger's dad went to college with Vern Gagne. So Vern Gagne was very big in the wrestling biz way back when. Here's a shock, though. Yahoo Finance actually did an article on why the DNC, and by default much of Big Left, is so out of touch and misinformed when it comes to their solution to gas prices, which, by the way, of course, includes a windfall tax on oil companies to finance a rebate for consumers. Here's what it said. It says, therapists advise against making major decisions when you're highly emotional. Democrats should heed that advice and stop proposing rash ways to lower gasoline prices. Now, before we start arguing saying, why don't we want, yes, we want lower gasoline prices. But as they're pointing out here, we don't realize, you know, it says Democrats want to impose a windfall tax on oil companies that could finance taxpayer rebates. Here's what it says, and this is spot on. The common failure of all these ideas is a misunderstanding of the dynamics in the oil and gas industry, which in the United States is dominated by private sector firms answerable to shareholders and investors, not to government ministers. 1 minute, Dan Dicker, who is founder of the Energy Word and author of Turning Oil Green, says the left thinks oil companies set oil prices. That's just false. Oil companies don't set prices. If they did, they wouldn't have let oil prices go negative in 2020. Democrats proposing the big oil windfall tax, including, of course, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island. This guy loves to get in front of the camera any chance he gets. They cite ExxonMobil's profits to make their case. In 2021, they point out, Exxon's profit jumped 60% over pre-pandemic levels. Of course, gas prices during that time rose from an average of $2.69 to $3.41. That means, by extension, that Exxon profits when oil and gas prices rise. Duh. But he points out, what White House and guys like Ro Khanna don't mention is that Exxon and other energy firms also suffer when oil and gas prices go down. In 2020, for instance, there was such an oversupply that the price briefly turned negative, meaning they couldn't sell their oil and had to pay to store it. It didn't last long, but low prices for most of 2020 wrought havoc in the industry, forced cutbacks that persist to this day. Remember, gas prices fell to a low of $1.87 in 2020. Guess what? Exxon posted a $22.4 billion loss, the largest in its history. So 2 years later, Now, 2 years later, some of these people are wanting a windfall tax. Don't fall for it. Go to the pump and see prices and say, yeah, that's a good idea. Windfall tax, hell yeah. Do not fall for the class envy memes and the man is sticking it to you mentality that big left is trying to force upon you. That's not how it works. It's simply not how it works. And as Holder points out, it doesn't stop Democrats from owning 10,000 shares of Exxon and Mobil. Exactly. Exactly. So don't fall for that stuff, folks. Don't be happy with high gas prices. First of all, when you get that email that goes around every time at a time like this, you'll get one. If you haven't gotten one, you'll get one. The one that says, boycott Exxon for a day. If everyone boycotts Exxon for one day, they'll lower their prices. Sure they will. Sure they will. Sam's Club, remember I told you Sam's Club had jumped to like 409. It jumped to 429 or 432 last weekend. I got it for 412 today. So 20 cents less than my wife paid last weekend. Guess what? At 2 o'clock today, 1:30, 2 o'clock, I'm sitting in line for gas at 4:12, not at $1.10, not at the thought of not having any gas because of some catastrophe. No, at 4:12, Sam's had a gas line. So, yeah, don't fall for all that crap. Okay, let's get to a little bit of sports. Despite some calls for eliminating sudden death overtime in the NFL, two proposals have been submitted to adjust the current format. Basically, it basically rewards the winner of the coin toss. Currently, if a team scores a touchdown on its opening possession, they win. The game is over. Now, one proposal calls for both teams to get a possession in overtime. The other calls for both teams getting a possession unless the team with first possession scores a touchdown and a two-point conversion, in which case that team wins. I got news for you on that second proposal. Teams will not risk a two-point conversion as often as these brilliant thinkers think they will. Essentially, like a college overtime, the team scoring first rarely goes for two. Now, sometimes an underdog might go for two, or a team will use a trick play like Boise State did in the 2007 Fiesta Bowl, but by and large, you trust your defense, especially when the opposing offense is in a do or die. But think about it. The only thing worse than missing an opening two-point conversion is the knowledge that the opponent only needs to kick the PAT to win should they score on their possession. Yeah, in any case, 24 of the 32 teams have to agree to whatever proposal they come up with for it to become a league rule. Of course, possibility they do something like not overhaul it, but merely adopt a different format for playoff games. I don't know. We'll see. La Dopey Nostra is bursting with pride over the USA Today, awarding one of its Women of the Year nominations or awards to Assistant Health and Human Services Secretary Admiral Rachel Levine as one of its honorees. Now, one publication pointed out Levine is neither a real woman nor a real admiral. Nevertheless, Levine isn't even the first transgender to win an award based on the cockamamie, so to speak, idea that becoming a transgender woman somehow makes you more special than a woman who's actually given birth, raised kids, managed a household and career, and maintained dignity. Look, while Obama and La Dopey Nostra sycophant Susan Rice celebrated on Twitter replies to her, Susan Rice is a woman by all accounts, by the way. Anyway, replies were somewhat scathing and deservedly so. As one reply noted, while air quote Rachel pulled her mother out of a Pennsylvania nursing home, at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, plandemic. She left hundreds of or thousands of others there to languish and in some cases die. I'm kind of sum this whole thing up for you with this. The absurdity has become. Unfortunately, Monty Python saw it back in 1978 or 9.
Perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg. Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
Well, why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry. What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies? It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
That's a classic bit from Monty Python's Life of Brian, 1979, I believe. Yeah, I mean, are we ever going to be over this? Obviously not. It's taking root. The fact USA Today would nominate this thing as Woman of the Year is whatever. I mean, don't forget, Caitlyn or Bruceland Jenner was Woman of the Year in several things back in the early stages of it, its transition, if you want to call it whatever. This is absurd. I mean, who are they kidding? And who, I mean, do these people, I mean, I got to ask, do these people sit around and just pretend that Rachel Levine was not born a man and was never a man? Or do they talk about the struggle or the gut? First of all, okay, look, I would say it's bold or brave if I thought that someone who did it was truly of sound and rational mind. Now, don't get me wrong. Or you jump in and start saying, Hank, there's probably people that really are. I get that. It's not, but such a minute percentage. I mean, please. I mean, I don't get the whole, I mean, first of all, Rachel Levine, if you look at the pictures, I've said it before, I'll say it again, it literally looks like a skit from Benny Hill. It is a person starring in a skit from Benny Hill. It is one of those male actors on Benny Hill dressed up as a woman for a skit. I mean, it's like, it says I'm a woman, but it doesn't even try to actually look like a woman. It just like puts on a wig and a dress. That's not normal people. I mean, I'm sorry. Are there people that like to dress like cross-dress and all that? Sure. Are there people that feel they're the wrong thing? Yes. I'm not going to fight that with anyone. I'm not about to waste my time or anyone else's. But seriously, when are we going to get to the point when we can look at each other and look at everyone and just say, look, this person's got a problem. This person's got some issues. But we can't be making her an undersecretary of health. Can't be making it an admiral. I mean, really, what's next? I mean, how long before the president of the men's PGA Tour is a guy who becomes a woman or vice versa? I mean, it's bad enough when we have men like Will Thomas pretending to be Leah Thomas and swimming against women. Not an actual, not a surgical transgender, not a fully hormonal transgender, obviously, because there's a problem we talked about before. Will Leah Thomas in the girls' locker room displaying its stuff? That's not a woman competing against other women. So when? I mean, when are we going to take it back? I mean, I'm not against female admirals. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm all for female military leaders. But in this case, come on. I got an email from my friend Steve a couple weeks ago. I wish I'd brought it up before. But it brings more focus to the insanity in D.C. Remember, the FDA had not had a permanent leader for over a year. They do have a new boss now. Dopey Joe nominated and the Senate approved. New Commissioner Robert Califf. Now, one can guess what his focus will be. You know, the opioid crisis or big pharma or pharma corruption or the increase in heart disease and deaths possibly related to the vaccine, maybe other issues, childhood obesity, real infectious diseases, other possible pandemics. Right? Wrong. All counts. No. Robert Califf, per a memo to his staff, named the number one priority for his FDA leadership. The focus? Well, of course, it'll be on that most problematic of all health issues, public threat of misinformation. Califf said, distortions and half-truths, particularly about COVID, do enormous harm. He says, a reactive mode is not appropriate, particularly in this new era of social media. The hypocrisy. Isn't it amazing how social media companies that censor anything labeled conservative are regarded as heroic, but the threat of misinformation and being reactive in the new era of social media renders being reactive as inappropriate? Gee, you'd almost think they wanted to be proactive and say, oh, start preparing for a crisis that isn't here yet. Hint, hint. Oh, and to give you an idea just how damn deep the swamp still is, yes, this is the same Robert Califf that served as FDA commissioner under Brock, throws like a bitch Obama. I better be careful. I had to apologize to Cindy Brady for this guy. Come to think of it, I'll bet you Major League Baseball, I'll bet half the delay in getting a resolution, I bet they've been figuring out any and all possible ways to keep Dopey Joe off the mound to throw out the first pitch. Wouldn't be surprised if that was the real reason for the delay. I really wouldn't. Speaking of Dopey Joe, a new Wall Street Journal poll says that 52% of Americans don't believe he will run for re-election in 2024, while only 20% said he would run. Don't know what the other 19% think, but I'm not even sure how I feel about it. Seriously, I mean, the guy is clearly not cognizant. Scarier still, in my opinion, is lately is Plastic Pelosi, our current Speaker of the House. I mean, I think she's losing it just as fast, if not faster. So I want to get to Holger. Holger's come up with a couple great tweets. Oh, God, Holger. Holger said, if Joe throws out the first pitch, he'll throw to second base. Oh, God. I shouldn't laugh because that's probably what will happen. Helger also asked, how come we never have issues with a woman transgendering to a male then competing in a male sport? You know why. We know why and how. We know the answer to that. Come on, man. Anyway, Helger posted a thing of Pelosi today. I mean, seriously, she's fading fast. Although I think in her case, I think it might be more a case of a battle with the bottle. I mean, she sure as hell looks and acts ripped in her latest press conferences. Now, my guess is either she's bummed out that she's got to drink vodka from someplace other than Russia, or she might be going hard on bourbon. It could be that. Here's a clue, Nance. Try to limit yourself to, I don't know, 6 or 8 shots at a sitting. And think about slugging the stuff after your pressers. I mean, holy crap. The video Holger posted of her on Twitter, she was taking questions from media. I damn near thought I was hearing something dubbed in Russian. Coherent. And I mean, we're talking flat out Otis Campbell level inebriation. I'll tell you, I could stand to see her lose her seat this November. That's for damn sure, at least as Speaker. Because really, if she loses her seat as Speaker, the squad will shred her and shed her. You know, they will use that as an excuse to dump her, even if she wins her actual seat, in her California seat, which I can't believe she would lose it. But yeah, I mean, I got to believe. Here's another one. I don't remember if Hozier posted this one or if this is another. Joe Biden announced that the first lady's husband contracted COVID. Now think about that. He announced that the first lady's husband contracted COVID. Someone had to remind him that he's the first lady's husband, first of all. Secondly, it was the second gentleman, the husband of Kamala Harris, Doug Emhoff, who contracted COVID. Dopey Joe? No, that's not what he said. The first lady's husband. Oh, I know what the other one. Holger posted, Joe Biden came out with a new announcement. We've found our new civil rights cause action. It is, Holger, correct me in the chat room here. It's a bill to prosecute people who post stuff online, sexual stuff. But here's what was creepy. I'm going to find the tweet on my phone. That's the easy way to find it without having to interrupt here. So Holger posted this. He asked a great question because here's one of the things he said. Okay. And this is why I retweeted and I said, creepy bastard. Here's what he said. He's talking like, okay, so intermittent images. I bet everybody knows somebody somewhere along the line. And Holger answered it perfectly. I don't know anyone, but then again, I don't have a pervert son named Hunter or hang out with the pizza crowd. P.S. Good to know Joe, or nice to know Joe is prioritizing. Literally, that's what we have reduced ourselves to in the Oval Office. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't just, he makes it sound like everybody knows somebody who had that. What? Is he serious? First of all, he's all but saying he knows somebody. Hunter's laptop. Some of the stuff on Hunter's laptop, some of the people on Hunter's laptop. You know, people. I've worked in the call center industry for most of my adult life. Mostly, not all, but mostly medical messaging services. So HIPAA is a big thing, and people always talk about HIPAA and how important it is, and blah blah blah, and why it's important. You know what HIPAA was, folks? Now people always argue this. It's futile for you to argue it, but HIPAA was basically the Bill Clinton protection bill. You remember Bill Clinton didn't want to release medical records, said it was private. Everybody knows why Bill Clinton wanted to hide his medical records. But be that as it may, it was amazing in that sense. I mean, here, Dopey Joe, well, we all know someone. Bill Clinton was also one of those that said, we need electronic medical records that travel with you everywhere. So you can be anywhere and you have your electronic medical records handy. Well, there's that on the surface. That's not a bad thing. But in the face of HIPAA, it's a pretty difficult thing. I mean, you're literally at a point. Now, some doctors' offices are very strict and serious. Others aren't. But, I mean, in some cases, I've known of doctors who literally write something on a Post-it to say, play golf at 5:30. Oh, here's the address. Write it down. And then they got to throw it away. I mean, you have a whole industry with HIPAA of secure messaging, for instance, of secure apps, so that if you were to quote unquote leave your phone sitting somewhere, somebody couldn't access your messages, which is a good thing. I mean, if your service sends you a message, you shouldn't be blabbing it out for everybody to see. Now, it's incumbent on you to do that, to that step. But there are situations where someone loses their phone, forgets their phone, has it stolen, whatever, and you don't want everything accessible. That makes sense. I mean, it would make sense if you were in the retail industry. You don't go posting people's credit card numbers around. That's why when you hear of security breaches, you know, change your credit card, change your passwords. But, yeah, that's what HIPAA was. It was a Bill Clinton protection bill. Well, this is really just a Hunter Biden protection bill is what it is. And to a lesser degree, somebody in the previous – or not the previous, but a previous first family who was part of some of those Hunter escapades, if you will. So, yeah, Holter nailing it with a couple of good videos today. There are tweets with video. The one with – but, no, again, as scary as Joe Biden is, Dopey Joe – what's scary about him is that he's having these issues. It's not his fault, people. I'm not blaming him for it. I mean, it's a real thing. He's having cognizance issues. What the problem is that he's the leader of the damn free world, so to speak, and nobody's questioning this in his inner circle. That his wife hasn't been castigated by big media and big left is another matter, but whatever. But it's repulsive. Now, in the case of Pelosi, no, she's just scary because I think she's hitting the bottle. I think she's already messed up anyway. She's already twisted. But yeah, that video, I don't know, maybe Holder, I don't know if you agree with me or not on that, but that one you showed of her, as Holder pointed out, she was like making all these air quotes and air, you know, like making motion of how a plane lands and stuff. She's just messed up. Now Mrs. Hank is doing it. Mrs. Hank is playing Airplane in the House. So anyway, okay, one more quick story. Then we're going to take a break and come back and talk March Madness. We are. Okay. Oil, remember, hit highs last week between $130 and $140 bucks a barrel. Now the disparity is West Texas crude and Brent crude. West Texas was closer to $130. Brent was closer to $140. They both dropped below 100 bucks yesterday, and they sit between 96 and 97 bucks a barrel. Meanwhile, the Fed is raising its rate by a quarter point, meaning loans that they make to member institutions would see a quarter point increase in the 0.25% increase in the interest rate. They see their benchmark at 1.9% by the end of this year and 2.8% for 2023, but oh, then staying at that level for 2024. Coincidence? Probably not. Now, how that shakes out downstream, in my opinion, doesn't look great. Look, especially if inflation continues at its current rate and the Department of Labor continues to insist that we have a low unemployment rate and consumer prices for energy don't see the same 25 to 30% drop that we have seen in oil prices the last couple of days. Yeah. Dopey Joe is, quote, demanding, unquote, that, by the way, demanding that we see a drop in oil prices immediately, or gas prices. Obviously, he doesn't get it. Holy crap, I mean, this guy destroys our domestic production, and he tells gas retailers to drop their prices based on what, you know, could well be just a temporary drop in crude prices. I mean, as things heat up between Russia and Ukraine, that ain't going to make things any better. Here's a hint. Back in 1982, when we were still seeing 7 to 8% inflation, Ronald Reagan had a plan. I can tell you this, it sure as hell didn't include increasing interest rates. The problem, though, is that having artificially dropped them so low the past 10 to 15 years, we've basically left ourselves with no choice but to increase them. Now, notice, by the way, that Dopey Joe made no mention of making sure that banks pay increased interest to investors or savers. No push to increase the yield on treasury securities. Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because it yields, pardon the pun, nothing to the swamp rats and the other cabal. Look, suffice it to say, as long as we see food and energy prices at the levels we have experienced, rate hikes are the least of the worries for average Joe, for Joe Average out there. I mean, really, when food and gas costs go up 50 to 100% over 18 months, yeah, interest rates aren't exactly your first concern, really. Now, meanwhile, though, I will say, back of the Jones house, we got some serious kale and spinach production going on. Now, the spinach took a bit of a hit. We had a cold snap last weekend. Spinach looked like it took a temporary hit, but this kale is going awesome. The peppers that I got out there starting to yield again, so some of those will go into the pickle jar. I'm planting new peppers and basil, getting ready for the pots. So no shortage of produce here. My point being, be ready to grow your own. As beef prices do what they do, if you really crave beef or want to have beef put away, go in with someone, buy half a cow. You know, buy a pig with someone. That's the only, really in the long run, that's the best answer. Now, T. Bodie says supply and demand won't drastically change. Oil will pull back to pre-war prices, $60 to $70. Distribution will change. Consumption won't. Now, pre-war, is he talking pre-war Ukraine? I assume he is. Must be that. So, anyway. Hey, we're going to take a break. And then we're going to come back, and T. Bodie and Indy Hawk are in the chat room. Hopefully they'll call in. Hawkeye Mike's already ready, at the ready. We're going to talk March Madness because it's here. In the meantime, a little tribute to Scott Hall during the break. This is the theme from the NWO group that he was part of. Give it a listen. Come back in about 2 minutes and 10 seconds. Of Scott Hall. Rest in peace, Scott Hall. Okay, so I forgot to tell you, I got my stuff right here. Here's what I'm going to be planting. I've got mixed, they're called Grand Bell mixed peppers. I'm going to do those. I'm going to do basil for some herbs. I've got my Serrano chilies, and I got cayenne. Now, everybody says they're the same. They are not. They're similar, but they're not the same. So T-Bodie is posting a Substack in the chat room. I don't see the link yet, but he said he's going to post it. It's a heavily followed guy, 200K plus Substack subscribers, a couple great articles that he sent by text today. To sort of give you an idea of just how things have gotten and how we need to be reacting, perhaps. Anyway, going to bring in Mike. Mike, you there? Mike, you there?
I'm here, Hank. How's it going?
Good. How are you, sir?
I'm here.
And I'm going to bring in Indy Hawk.
Thanks.
Indy, you there?
I'm here. Hi, Hank.
How's it going, man? Well, you're a semi-celebrity because until T. Bodie calls in, and I don't know if Brother Tommy's going to make the call. He said he would try, but, you know, it's always a grayer day when Brother Tommy's not around. But anyway, Indy, I want your report. You were at the Big Ten tournament. You were at the Big Ten tournament. How was it?
It was really good. I mean, I went to the session Friday, which had IU in it. So, and I told my wife, I'm going to wait, make sure the Hawks win Thursday, go Friday. And then that session caught IU in the first game. So prices went up about 50% there. And then went to the final game against Purdue. Of course, that was a packed house too, because another Indiana team. So, but yeah, there were some great games, really good.
Yeah. Could you get beers there? I know this is how juvenile for me to ask, but could you get beers or no?
Yeah, there was drinks, sir.
How much were beers? How much were they soaking for?
I didn't get one. I had some drinks before.
Oh, okay. You played it smart. So what other fans were there?
After.
I mean, of course. What would that, like you mentioned, did Illinois fans just like leave en masse after they lost to Indiana Friday?
A little bit, yeah, a good chunk of them. But when we were watching Illinois-Indiana, that was a phenomenal game Friday. And we had Illinois guys on the right and Indiana fans on the left. And, of course, we were Iowa, so just kind of feeding it back and forth. But anyway, it was fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a few people left. And the second game, we actually went down like 10 minutes to go and went down and sat right behind the Iowa cheerleaders or the Iowa pep band. So it was kind of fun.
Oh yeah, I bet. So, so when you saw that game Friday, did you think the Hawks were looking good for making it to Sunday or no?
Yeah, it's kind of a bipolar team. They were playing better defense, and that's the key.
Yeah.
Rebounding, yeah, that's a question mark. But I didn't expect them to go on, but once the Bohannon banked in the three, and this stuff is. It's crazy this time of year.
Yeah, I guess.
The championship game, it just looked like every team has a flaw. So the Big Ten has what, 9 teams?
Yeah.
But none of them are above a 3 seed. So you had Iowa, Illinois out-rebounded Iowa by 18. But Illinois couldn't handle the ball. No, Purdue. I'm sorry. Purdue out-rebounded Iowa by 18 and lost because they kept turning it over. And Toussaint had 4 steals in 10 minutes. It was pretty fun to watch.
Well, even the Indiana game, if you know, it was like we were dead. We were dead to water, I thought, dead in the water. We were down, what, 8 with about 3 minutes left, 3.5 minutes left. And the next thing you know, the Bohannon's banking in that 3, so... What do you think, Mike, of the games over the weekend? What was your thoughts?
Well, just the thought, you know, the main thing was just, you know, how this team, this Iowa team, has just kind of transformed from where they were mid-season. You know, remember they were the first 21 games, they were 14-7, and I can't remember what that last loss, but they lost like 3 in a row to that point.
Yep.
And then since that time, and that was about, I think that was the time when they made some shakeups in the lineup, started starting Perkins, and they've gone 12-2, and it's just, you know, something's clicked there, and you know, we can talk about that later if you want.
T. Bodie in the house. What was your funnest point of watching the weekend?
You know, I thought that, and you guys have watched these games a little closer than I, but Perkins really kind of stood out as being a force inside to break it up. They had to cover him, which opened up the Murrays and the, you know, Bohannon, and kind of helped that whole thing. I don't know where he was the whole first half of the season, but the last 10 games, he's come through no different.
Yeah. Brother Tommy and I were talking the other day, or I guess yesterday and the day before, and he made a point. He said, you know, much as we think Bohannon is a point guard, he just, you know, he just doesn't. I mean, you expect your point guard to get a lot of assists, and he does not. But by the same token, Toussaint coming off the bench is a huge spark defensively. He just seems to come in and give us a defensive spark that we need, and I think that's been huge too. I mean, he's not starting now, but I think he's made a big difference there. So,
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, you, Mike, you were saying some stuff about John Miller from formerly of Hawkeye Nation, and then now just does the Hawkeye podcast. He had some. He basically says Perkins has been the difference, right, in this resurgence.
Yeah, and that he had his most recent podcast, and I know some people don't take Miller or leave him. But I thought this podcast was good because he took a real deep dive and tried to go into what the transformation here of this Iowa team was, and he's primarily resting on Perkins, and he noted his basic, thrust of what he was saying was that Perkins and Ted kind of alluded to it. He breaks things up. His penetration and his ability to basically force the best defender of the other team on him makes everybody else better. Plus, part of it is, since he started, I think he's been averaging in double figures himself, and he takes it to the if you remember in the Indiana game in particular, he takes it to the rim and gets these points when Iowa needs them.
Yeah,
and
he does.
But it also takes some of the pressure off these other guys. And one of the great points he made was the 3-point shooting of Iowa's has gone way up. Bohannon, who we're all pretty frustrated with, was below 30%. Now he's up over 40% from three, and even Keegan Murray went from I think 37% to 50%. Now that's just part of the picture because even when Iowa doesn't shoot well, and they didn't shoot well from three really against Purdue, they were 8 for 28, less than 30%. This is his point also. And were out-rebounded by 18 by Purdue, yet Iowa won the game by 9 points. And he said the reason was because Purdue cannot keep up with Iowa's pace. And it's this pace that Iowa's developed that has, I think, made them so good. And, we talk about the modern-day game in college, also in the NBA, I think, and it requires great guard play. And for really, for a long time, Iowa's not really – had standouts at that. You can talk about one or two individuals, but the guard play, and this even compared to last year's team, and this year the guard play has really gone up, and it's due to I would say it's not just Perkins, although he's a big factor because he's a starter, but I think also you have to throw in Toussaint coming off the bench, and I would throw Connor McCaffrey, who's picked up his game coming off the bench. He's always been good at handling the ball. But the point being is that Iowa's guard play and the pace that they play makes them and the number of weapons they have make it really hard. They cannot just focus on Keegan Murray. And, if you remember last year, what happened was teams were able to collapse and focus a lot on Garza, and there was a lot of inconsistency from everybody else, especially in the last half of the year, including Wieskamp. I think that kind of caused Iowa's year to kind of decelerate there at the end and then have the disappointing NCAA tournament. Now, the proof's going to be in the pudding. How are they going to do in the NCAAs? But I think Iowa's positioned with their bracket and the way they're playing, which is on the upswing to make a deep run, we'll see what happens. But just about every pundit's picking them in the Final Four, which I find amazing.
Yeah. Well, I think, Perkins, that's the other thing. Is you mentioned last year, Perkins' improvement from last year has been the difference. It's not just Perkins being the difference.
Oh, yeah.
It's how much he's improved from last. Because you remember last year, that Oregon game, he made like two or three mistakes in three or four trips up and down the court. It was like, what in the hell? I remember he had that 3-point, they were shooting a desperation three at one point, and he fouled the guy when he didn't have to, and it meant, you know, resulted in 3 points at the free throw line, you know, that kind of thing. He's not doing that kind of stuff now. He's just flat out a bigger and better player now and more mature. So anyway, you know, I mean, it's nice to see. I mean, I don't, you know,
oh,
like
yeah.
you say, the proof's
fun
in the pudding.
Team to watch.
But if we were to get to the Final Four, it would be well deserved. I really think a lot of people have said it. It's not new, but I really think this is Fran McCaffrey's best coaching job. The adjustments he's made. You know, just knowing
you'd
what
have
he's
to
got
point me to another year where he did a better job, and I can't think.
I mean,
of it.
Literally, you know, times when he's pulled Patrick, his own kid, off the floor at times, and it's like, yep, he just does it. Oh, geez. Holder says Richmond Spiders will have Steph Curry playing. Oh, come on, Holder. So anyway,
they may need Steph Curry for that game.
Well, but you know, but that's another thing. Richmond beating Davidson. Pulled them. They, like I said, they stole a bid. I mean, there's some.
Remember, even a team like Richmond, which you know I was going to be heavily favored. By the way, Providence is not going to be an easy game, but you got to take everybody seriously because you get these teams like the Richmonds and the Davidsons, and you talk about some of the others, St. Mary's.
Yeah.
I mean, this is it for them. They're going to be sky high. Chance to upset a Big Ten team. Iowa cannot just show up and win, and if they think they can, I think, you know, it could be a short run here.
I think we're going to have a real problem with Dakota State.
Yeah, right.
We're going to have a real problem with quick
team Providence. Maybe Indy Mac knows a little more about it, but yeah, I've heard that they're a real dangerous team.
Who's that?
South Dakota State. They're playing.
Yeah.
They play Providence in the first round, and then the winner of that game plays the winner of Iowa Richmond.
Yep. So, any other conference tournament surprises anyone? Indy, do you see anything that jumped out that was a real shock conference tournament wise?
Not really. I was kind of disappointed in Xavier not getting in. Jack Nungey has just had a phenomenal year. Shooting the 3, 7 foot tall. If he was on this Iowa team, holy cow, that's a missing piece. We don't really have a center that can score. But anyway, I thought they were in. They were actually ranked in the top 15 and really tanked towards the end. But
yeah. Mike, any
State?
What?
Sorry?
T. Bodie? What was your surprise?
Yeah. Well, just Iowa State getting in. You know, they kind of started off the season so strong, and then I think they dropped, what, like 9 games?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I was surprised, too, to tell you the truth.
But they're in a good conference, you know. I mean, that's the Big 12 is as good as – not maybe not quite as good as the Big 10, but, you know, they've certainly got their – they got their one seed with Kansas, so, you know, I'm not sure. You know, here's the teams that – first of all, I thought this SEC was mildly surprising, but – I think I was most surprised by the ACC. I mean, Virginia Tech basically stealing a bid. I don't know that they were going to get in otherwise. Probably they were on the cusp. But, I mean, the ACC only got 5 teams in. But how about Texas A&M getting left out? What's anybody's thoughts on that? Like, Indy, you've seen – what was your thought? Did you see comparisons and stuff?
No, I usually follow Lunardi, but that, you know, like you said – when there's an upset in some of the small conference games, it steals the bid. So it's amazing how accurate Lunardi is.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at some of the teams that got in over Texas A&M, I mean, here's other – like Colorado probably could have gotten in, Oregon maybe. You mentioned Xavier. In the Missouri Valley, the number one seed from the Missouri Valley, UNI – is playing in the NIT, and Drake is in the damn CBI. I mean, that's
I definitely think they've overreacted for, you know, going away from the power conference teams and trying to get the Cinderella. But.
Yeah, but it's like if a Cinderella doesn't win its conference tournament, it's like they're suddenly on the bubble. I mean, that's what I don't get. But anybody not okay?
Yeah.
Anybody not okay with Michigan getting in?
Yeah, can I say something on that one?
Yeah.
I guess I mean good for the Big Ten, but I was a little surprised, not so much that they got in, but that they weren't one of the last four teams. Like, why was Indiana one of the last four but not Michigan?
Rutgers.
Explain that one to me.
And Rutgers, yeah.
And Rutgers, too. And Rutgers. I think both Rutgers and Indiana, and in particular Indiana, should not have been last four. They should have, you know, and Michigan got in and they weren't a last four. I mean, I don't know. I don't quite get that.
And not only that, I mean, you know, Michigan, I mean, losing, they lost in their opening game. You know, it's not like they, you know, won a game and then, you know, and then lost in the next round. I mean, they lost their opening game. I mean, it was at 8-9 in the Big Ten, so that's kind of a – but, I mean, I'm sorry, especially after Juwan Howard's stuff. I mean, I'm just surprised that the committee didn't, Texas A&M had a hell of a run in the SEC tournament, you know. And I know it's the SEC and all that, but, I mean, the SEC has got some serious talent in that league. I mean, it's not – it may be undisciplined, a lot of it, and it may be cheaters, you know, like they are in football with Bruce Pearl. But, I mean, they've got some serious talent. I just was surprised to see A&M get left out. And in favor of Michigan, even though it's, like you say, it's good for the Big Ten, I'm sorry. I just I 17 and 14 Michigan, I don't, you know, versus
right.
some
so
of those
hey,
other teams. Yeah.
Hey, it begs the question, because the Big Ten teams that did get in, nine of them, how many are going to win their first round game? Because I don't see three or four of them winning that first round.
So that's what we're going
to go by past years. We're going to have a few of them go down.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're getting
that point. We haven't had a champ since 2000. Yeah.
So we're getting to that point. So here's our first question. Indy, we'll start with you. Which is the first Big Ten team to lose?
Oh. Which one plays first?
Indiana won
yeah,
last night. Indiana won last night.
Right.
Rutgers plays Notre Dame tonight.
But here's what you're going to hear. So even if the Big Ten does really well and gets eight teams in the Sweet 16, they're
yeah.
seeded to get none into the final. So if they get eight into the Sweet 16 and none into the final eight, are they the best conference?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would say yes, but everybody it's always top heavy, you know.
Yeah, no doubt.
Big Ten deep with good teams, but not top heavy.
So who do you? But so if you have to pick the first Big Ten team to lose, who's it going to be?
Michigan.
Okay. T. Bodie, who do you think it's going to be?
Rutgers.
Rutgers.
Ooh. Rutgers.
Mike, how about you? Who do you think it's going to be?
Yeah, well, I do think Ted might be onto something there with Rutgers. It's going to be a tough game for him, but I'll give you two that I think are going to have a tough first round game and could lose, and that is Michigan to Colorado State, and I think Ohio State may have a tough game with Loyola of Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's they've become a darling. I mean, they took down Illinois last year, and of course made that Final Four run a few years ago. So which Big Ten team makes
– Juwan Howard gets two technicals that cost him the game. You heard it here first.
Who do they got? I mean, wait a second. I'm looking at their seed. Let's see. They're an 11, right? So they've got
Colorado State.
Yeah, Colorado State. Okay.
Colorado State's a good team. I can tell you
so
from they, out
yeah.
here. Yeah, they're
yeah.
tough. Yeah.
So, okay, which Big Ten team makes the deepest run? And if you say Iowa, I want an alternate. But T. Bodie, we'll start with you. Which Big Ten team makes the deepest run?
Illinois.
Okay.
I think Illinois
Mike, how about
final
you?
14.
Mike, how about you?
This sort of goes against Iowa's interest because I do think Iowa's going to make a deep run.
So you can
run,
say
but
Iowa,
I
but you just
got to
give an alternative.
Yeah. Okay, here it is. An Elite Eight matchup, it's going to be Iowa-Wisconsin.
Ooh,
yep.
Interesting. Andy, how about you?
I've got Iowa, Ohio State going to the Sweet 16 and
okay.
no further.
So what's going to happen to Michigan State and Purdue? I mean, nobody's talking about them. Anybody thinking Michigan State or Purdue's going to make a run?
I think Purdue gets beat by Kentucky. Or UCLA.
Okay.
Yep.
What's Purdue? Purdue's a three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Wisconsin's is good, though.
Wisconsin's also a three, and Illinois is a four, right? Yeah, they're a four in the South. So, okay. How about the – okay, so
let me tell you what Mrs. Peabody, she just handed me her bracket.
Okay.
And while I would think that it would be all over the place, and she understands seeding, so she's got some favorites. But she's got Iowa winning it all. Good girl.
Good for her.
She's got Villanova, Kentucky, and Georgia, which are all pretty good Final Four teams.
Villanova, Kentucky, and who's the fourth team?
Gonzaga.
Okay,
Arizona,
so
right? Okay.
No, she's got Villanova over Arizona.
So Indy Hawk has Iowa going out in the Sweet 16. So you don't think they can beat Kansas? I take it.
I think they can. I just think it's going to be
hard
for Iowa.
I did
take Kansas because I look at like Oregon, and we were just completely overmatched athletically.
Yeah.
I mean, because he took Bohannon and McCaffrey out of the game. Those guys can't guard. They can't play against that kind of quickness that you don't really see that in the Big Ten. So, but the difference is Keegan Murray is an absolute unreal player and probably our top one or two in our history. But we have athleticism we can go to. I mean,
which we haven't had recently. Yeah, we haven't had that recently.
Yep.
Certainly
yeah,
not experienced
if
athleticism.
That's funny. Don't you think that Toussaint and Perkins changed the equation a little bit as far as the athleticism
yeah, I do.
And keep up Kansas?
Absolutely. He just has to play him. He's going to play Connor and Bohannon.
Right.
And who are they going to guard? I mean,
I don't think you'll see them on the floor much at the same time. I really don't.
Yeah, if at all, though,
so
it's going to be more.
I think when you see, as an example, I think the first two you see coming out are in a rotation are Bohannon and Patrick McCaffrey, and I think you then see Chris Murray and Connor or Toussaint and Connor, and depending on how he brings them in, either way, I think you see Connor either going sort of like a swing 2-3 and Toussaint at the point, or if it's Connor and Chris, and then I think you just see Chris going, playing wing, so to speak, and Connor taking point. I mean, I don't think you're going to see Connor and Bohannon on the floor much at the same time. I think Fran knows that. I think, number one, I think you're still dealing with guys that have had long-term, over the years, have had injuries, and you just don't risk that, but who knows? We're talking about Keegan Murray. We forget about Chris Murray. Chris Murray had a huge shot in the Rutgers game. If you remember, we got up like 12 or 14 at one point in the first half, and suddenly Rutgers just, boom, made it. They cut it to six. And then Chris, near the end of the first half, hit that huge three to make it nine at half. And I think people didn't talk about that much over it because we controlled the second half. But, I mean, that was huge. I really thought at one point after we'd gotten the lead, I thought, oh, my God, Rutgers is going to come back and just out-hustle us and out-athletic us. And then Chris hit that huge, huge three, and that was just – that was
yeah,
massive.
He's the best three-pointer shooter on the team. You guys know I've been on Chris Murray all the year. Why is he not playing? He's a better rebounder than Keegan, and he's a better shooter.
I don't disagree with that, but I think Iowa's best lineup, and I'll see what you guys think, is when we have the two Murray brothers in, Rebraca, Toussaint, and Perkins. I think that's a dynamite lineup.
Totally agree. Because we got to have Rebraca in there to bang.
Yeah.
I think you have
Ogundele getting 10 minutes in, pretty good contribution in the Purdue game.
He looked pretty good.
Yeah, he did.
I was surprised.
Yeah,
I think you got to have Bohannon. You know why?
You say,
he pulls the Bohannon pulls the defenders out because they respect him. They're afraid of his gunning abilities.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
One last. So as opposed to I love the speed and everything of what's our guard the
Toussaint.
Toussaint
Perkins.
But sometimes he tends to turn it over and comes in too fast.
Yeah.
Depends if we're playing a slow down, slow down team or not.
Yeah, the surprise for Iowa has been Peyton Sanford. I mean, my goodness.
He
can light it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
he has to do that, too.
You know, you look at who we lost last year. Obviously, if we still had Luka Garza back, that would have, you know, he could have technically under COVID. But, I mean, you know, not having Wieskamp, I don't think has made that much of a – we haven't had a drop-off. Certainly, Glassfoot, league transfer into Kentucky, I don't think has hurt us at all. So, I mean, I think Andy's right.
Nungy would have been nice to have had on this team. Nungy would have been nice.
But really, in a sense, he can't play the five. He's too fragile to play the five. And his luck at Iowa certainly wasn't very good. I mean, the guy had multiple injuries, and it just, you know. So, but Glassfoot wasn't turned out not to be a loss at all. So, you know, I mean, what the hell? Who cares? Okay. So I'm going to go the reverse. Instead of asking for, for your regional picks and all that, start off, Indy, who do you have winning it all?
I have Gonzaga. No surprise there.
Okay. T. Bodie, who do you have?
I think it's kind of hard to draw Iowa all the way out there and not have them win it all. But especially if it's a rematch against Gonzaga, because isn't that who beat them out last year?
No, that was
but
a couple
I have
years
Gonzaga.
Ago.
I have Gonzaga. No, okay. I have Gonzaga winning.
Okay. Mike, who do you got?
But, hey.
Oh, go ahead.
They wouldn't play Iowa wouldn't play Gonzaga until the championship game. But, you know, you hope, right? But that's not the same as what you think. I do think Iowa's got a shot to get in the Final Four, a decent one. But if I had to pick one team to win it all, I'd probably go with Arizona.
Ooh, AZ. Okay. T. Bodie, you were starting to say something else.
When I was filling out my brackets earlier, I read a stat that in the last 16 years, 13 years, a double-digit seed has made it to the Sweet 16. Now, I don't have one in my bracket. Does anybody else?
Double-digit. I do not.
There's a couple potentials, but 13,
There's two teams I wanted to put in there. There was two teams I wanted to put in there. I wanted to put Indiana, and I wanted to put UT Chattanooga. But
that's interesting. You know, I've got St. Mary's all the way out to the Final Four, and they play Indiana.
Yeah,
you do have them. UT Chattanooga, I wanted to, but I just can't see them beating Illinois. But they had that huge win at the end of their conference championship, and they won their conference regular season. So I just think they're a better team maybe than people are thinking. South Dakota State, but they play in our regional, so I really don't want that to happen. But the two teams I would have wanted, what I would have put for double-digit seed, I would have had Indiana or Chattanooga. I think on the other side, South Dakota State, maybe, because they've got Providence in that first game. But beyond
what,
that, I mean.
Miami? How good is Miami down there?
No.
Hey,
I mean,
can I ask you guys, Hank, can I just real quick, and this goes to you too, if Iowa is in the Sweet 16, as I think they will be, Indy Mac agrees, against Kansas, that's in Chicago. Anybody thinking of going to that game if that happens?
We all are.
There you go.
If we beat Providence, the winner, if we beat the winner of Providence, South Dakota State, our next game is Kansas?
Yep, Kansas.
Oh, yeah,
it would be.
Yeah,
Kansas wins their first two, yeah.
And then potentially Auburn
in Chicago.
Or Wisconsin.
Right.
So, and really, frankly, that's the side of the I think the Auburn Wisconsin side is the easier side. I mean, if we could have gotten the two or three, which we weren't gonna, but I mean, I really think they have an easier go than than Kansas, you know, frankly. And that often happens, though, too, that the 2 and 3 teams get.
Look out for San Diego State, though, against Kansas. If we do get by Providence, we might be playing San Diego State.
What I'm
doing in my old age is I'm looking at defense and rebounding. And I went to Ken Pom. I'm looking at defense efficiency, and I filled out an entire bracket based on it. San Diego State's right up there.
Really?
We'll see how it does.
So my question is, Creighton, what did they? Are they as good as they were last year?
Creighton.
I didn't pay much attention to them. Yeah, San Diego State's only favored by 2.5 in that game.
That's the 8-9, right? That's the 8-9 in the Midwest.
Yep.
Yeah, those are always tough ones to pick because sometimes you look at like North Carolina Marquette in the East. You're thinking, how is UNC an 8 seed? But then you're also thinking some years lately, how is Marquette a 9 seed, you know? So I don't know. Those are ones that it's almost like coin flip. So
Jeremy,
I don't know how good Creighton – that conference, they're in the Big East now, you know? I mean, I think of them back when they're in the old – whatever it was when they were in the Missouri Valley. It's hard to think of them as a Big East team. But looking at this, again, double digits, I just don't know how any of them are going to get past the second weekend, but who knows? I mean, someone always does. What's the other thing that a team from the first four has made the Sweet 16? I forgot how many times, but a bunch of times. And hasn't it? Wasn't there a team from the first four that also made the Final Four? Anyone?
No one's coming to mind, but there could be. I don't,
was it
I don't
was it like Virginia Commonwealth? Virginia Commonwealth maybe? Was Shaka Smart? Weren't they a first four? Maybe I could be wrong. So anyway, okay. So let's get to picking. Start, Mike. We'll start with you. Who's the East winner?
Hang on, let me get my bracket real quick.
Hey, Mom.
Hang on just one sec here.
Okay.
Okay, here we are. Okay. Who is the East winner? I'm going to go with Kentucky.
Okay, you got Kentucky in the East. T. Bodie, who you got in the East?
I'm going to stay with Kentucky.
Okay. Indy.
Wasn't UCLA or not.
St. Mary's.
Yeah, I was going to say there's the sleeper pick right there, I think. Yeah.
Okay, South Region, T. Bodie. Who's your winner out of the South?
Which one is that?
South is Arizona and Villanova, Tennessee, and Illinois. Illinois is the fourth.
I got Illinois coming out of there.
Do you really? Okay.
I got Illinois beating Tennessee.
Okay.
Tennessee beating Villanova.
Indy, who you got coming out of the South?
I've got Arizona. Arizona to me is Gonzaga and Arizona are clearly the two best teams, but watch out for Tennessee. The sleeper is Tennessee there.
Okay. Mike, who you got coming
Tennessee
out of the
South? Could win
the whole thing. Yeah, I agree. Arizona is the team to beat, and I think they're going to win the South.
Okay. Let's go to the West. Indy, who do you got coming out of the West?
I have got Gonzaga.
Okay.
Texas Tech is sleeper there.
And Mike, who you got coming out of the West?
Yeah, I think Gonzaga.
Okay, and T. Bodie, you've got Gonzaga, obviously, because you have them winning the whole thing. So, okay, and finally, the Midwest. Mike, who wins the Midwest?
Got to go with the Hawks. I know some of it's wishful thinking, but I think they can do it.
Okay, now, you have to have an alternate since we know it's because of the bias. If it's not the Hawks, who's it going to be?
That Sweet 16, Kansas and Iowa, is the key. I think the winner of that game will win the Elite Eight game and go to the Final Four.
Okay, T. Bodie, who you got coming out of the Midwest?
You know, I got Iowa coming out of there, but I got them beating Wisconsin, and I think that Wisconsin would beat Kansas.
So you think it's Wisconsin if it's not Iowa?
Yeah.
Okay. And
now,
Indy.
The Big Ten show up.
Go ahead.
Up.
What? You think the Big Ten does show up?
The Big Ten needs to show up. They need to have a couple teams get to the
Final
Four.
I agree. They got to do it this year. Somebody.
Right. And Indy, who you got in the Midwest?
I've got Auburn coming out of there, if not Iowa. But then watch out for San Diego State. I think they got a real shot to beat Kansas and maybe come out to meet Auburn.
Is anybody think Kansas is in the Final Four, possibly? I mean, when's the last time Kansas was in the Final Four and actually made – let me look this up. I know they've made it, but, I mean – and I know they won it in 2008, I think it was, but let me look it up.
Yeah, I think the elite, the winner of Iowa Kansas is going to be the Final Four team out of the Midwest. So if it's not Iowa, I kind of lean on Kansas.
Okay, so I'm just looking. When was the last time Kansas made the Final Four? 2018, they did make the 2018. Okay. But they had lost. I mean, they went through a streak there of losing to getting beat by, you know, I mean, you and I beating them and other teams. I mean, they just seem to me, but I don't know. I think this, okay, who's, what single digit seed, or shouldn't say, what top five seed loses the first, do any top five seeds lose the first game? Mike, start with you. Any top five seeds that are going to lose their first game?
Yeah, you know, I think, not to steal Indy Hawks thunder on this one, but I think, look at number four, Providence maybe going down to South Dakota State.
Yeah. People have talked about that.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay. Indy, what about you? You're thinking the same thing, South Dakota State?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Duke, but, I mean, their first one is against Georgia State, or Cal State Fullerton, so that's probably not going to happen. I don't know. Who does Purdue got? They've got, like, Akron?
Yale.
Or Yale, okay, so that's not going to happen, no.
They got Texas in the second game.
Yeah, I like Texas a lot. I've got Texas beating Purdue.
UCLA's got Indiana, right?
That's not first round, though. That'd be the second round game.
Oh, who's Indiana's first round? No. Indiana is
St. Mary.
St. Mary, okay. So, yeah, that's not going to happen. I don't know. I don't even know if I see any of them losing in the – other than, like, Providence. I could see that. Houston's got one that I – oh, no, Houston's not. You're not going to lose. I don't know. I think Providence might be the only top five seed that loses the first. You got to run? Okay. Yeah, I think Providence might be the only one that loses in the first round. Or, you know what I mean, the round of 64.
Houston-Illinois game. I saw Houston play. Man, they are so athletic. I don't see how Illinois can match up with Houston, but it should be a heck of a game.
That'd be second round, right?
Yep.
Okay. That's right. You got to remember, 4 and 5 play in the second round, so you could have some really good games there. UCLA, St. Mary's, Illinois, Houston, Providence, Iowa, and Arkansas, UConn, or you could have Iowa playing South Dakota State as well. But
yeah, after you get past Gonzaga and Arizona, it is wide open. I mean, I don't think this field has ever been this. So many potential teams that can win it.
I mean, Auburn. I don't think Duke. Frankly, I think as overseed, I think Duke at a two is overseeded. That's just me, but
I think so too. You wonder if Duke might make a run, just, you know, because it's Krzyzewski's last go. But I just don't see it.
They could. I mean, they couldn't close it out in his final home game against North Carolina. They couldn't beat Virginia Tech in the conference final. I mean, I just don't –
I was thinking, like Hawkeye Mike just said it. Duke's, he's going to get all the calls. You know, they're going to, you know, Duke's going to be hard to beat. And they're losing everything.
T-Bone, you were saying something?
Yeah, I just, Duke is going to get, at least get through the first weekend because of the Krzyzewski factor.
Let's see, who would they have?
We got Texas Tech, which might be tough.
Oh, they would have Michigan State in the second round.
Yeah.
That's assuming Michigan State gets past Davidson.
Davidson, exactly.
You know,
I don't know about that one.
So that would be a single seed. That's a double-digit seed that could win is Davidson, no doubt. I mean, I don't, you know. Who's Iowa State got? Iowa State's got.
They could win that first game against
LSU. They got
LSU.
Yeah.
Yeah, LSU. LSU's been struggling too a little bit.
Yeah, and their coach just got fired.
But I don't think they get past Wisconsin.
I don't think they get past Wisconsin either. Yeah.
So I mean,
second round.
I don't. Here's the. I go back to our game against Purdue. Everybody was saying, my sister was messaging and saying, the big game today. I just didn't see us beating Purdue. I mean, I just thought that was the monkey we couldn't get off our back. You know, we just don't match up well against certain teams, and I'm glad we didn't have to play Wisconsin, you know, and I just I just didn't see us beating Purdue. So I guess nothing will shock me. But is Purdue geared to make a big run, you think? Anyone think Purdue is geared?
They certainly could.
I mean, they got what? They start with
I see Purdue getting to the Sweet 16, but I just don't know if they can get past Kentucky. That's all.
They just couldn't handle the ball. I mean, it was power. They just destroyed us inside athletically, rebounding. But man, the turnovers, Toussaint just tore them up, and it was just a battle of one team couldn't rebound and the other team couldn't bring the ball.
Okay, so here's from the chat room. Holger has Purdue to win it all. We're not going to question his drug use. He's got Virginia Tech beating Texas. He asks, doesn't South Dakota State still use peach baskets? This is a guy from Minnesota asking this question, by the way. So, yeah, exactly. Let's see who else. Holger has Tennessee losing to Villanova. He has Gonzaga losing to UConn. And he's got Kansas beating Creighton and then beating Iowa. Wow. He's got Purdue and Auburn in the final. Whew. I don't see what Vito's
been checking. One team no one's mentioned is Baylor, you know, the number one seed
in the East.
In the East and defending national champion, and yet, you know, no one seems to be thinking they're going to be there at the end.
They've got two guys out, two starters, I believe. But, yeah, they're a heck of a team. You know they're deep, and they can easily do it.
They're two. That's right. They do have two starters out. So that's that'll be
– when you say out, you mean out for the whole tournament or just the first round game or something?
Don't know.
I'm not sure, but I think it's the whole tournament.
Oh, man.
Okay,
so,
wow.
Meanwhile, the game that's underway, Bryant –
still number one.
Wright State leads Bryant by a point for the Wright to face Arizona. So there's that.
No pun intended.
Yeah, the Wright to face. Yeah, so, yeah, but I'm trying to look for the Baylor info where they it's not popping up on a front page anywhere, so doesn't say. Oh, gosh, Xavier's coach is out. Did you read that, Indy?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, Travis Steele is out as Xavier's head coach.
Oh, yeah.
See? It doesn't say. Well, it just says, yeah, following multiple meetings. They beat Cleveland State in the NIT last night. So, yeah, and also, I don't know if you guys heard, Mike White's out at his left Georgia or left Florida to go to Georgia.
Yeah, that Xavier fire doesn't surprise me. Because they have Suggs, who was an NBA guard. Fremantle was like an all-Big East forward. And then Nungy came in. He led him in scoring and rebounding. And here they didn't even make the tournament with all that talent.
Yeah. And then the AP All-America first team has three Big Ten guys on it. Keegan Murray, Kofi Coburn, and, of course, what's his name, Johnny Davis. So that's not a shock. But makes you wonder how the Big Ten's not going to go deeper, how the Big Ten got nothing higher than a third seed. But
that's one thing anyway. I like about Iowa. We've got a go-to guy to get him the ball in whatever way. But Keegan Murray, I mean, he is, you know, to me it's either him or Ronnie Lester for the greatest ever. He's just incredible. His rebounding, his whole game, inside, outside.
I was shocked how it wasn't even – I hadn't even realized it until during the Rutgers game that he was going to become the single-season scoring leader in Iowa history. I mean, that's how
right,
quietly –
kind of crept up on everybody. Yeah,
that's how quietly it's happened in a way because, I mean, let's face it, this is not a knock on Luka Garza, one of my favorite all-time Hawkeyes, but, you know, you'd have thought the way they talked last year that Garza scored, you know, 1,000 points in the regular season, you know, the way things were going. I mean, retiring his number, all that stuff. And then here we come in and it's, you know, it's Keegan Murray suddenly is our all-time leading or all-time single season leading scorer. That anybody think he stays another year?
I don't, but well, I mean, this guy was,
I don't either.
The 334th ranked recruit 2 years ago.
Yep.
He then plays his first year at Iowa, plays about 15, 16 minutes, you know, 6, 7 points a game. You ever see anybody go from that to player of the year or All-American? I mean, what a – just a meteoric rise. I mean, it's incredible. I can't think of a player who's done that.
What was the knock on him coming out of high school? Was it because he went to a prep school for an additional year? I mean, what was – you know, why was he so low ranked? I mean, was it because people figured that he wasn't that much better than Chris? I mean, I just don't get it because even last year you could see that he was clearly not a – he was clearly deserving of a higher ranking. I mean,
yeah, they were both lowly, not highly ranked.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't get that. I don't, you know, I don't see what everybody missed.
I think that, yeah. And I don't see him staying either because I mean, what are they picking him like 5 or 6th pick in the first round of the NBA? I mean, I just, how do you pass that up?
It might be 3 or 4.
I just don't see it. Yeah. Maybe more than that. I think that there was some speculation that there might be a tiny chance he came back just to play with his brother Chris again. But I just, you know, if there's anyone around him, give him any kind of advice and he's got any kind of sense, and I think he does, you know, he's got to go pro.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, selfishly, you want him to stay because you're thinking he's only a sophomore. But, I mean, realistically, what's left for him, you know, other than, you know, an NCAA championship, but I mean that's not something we see every year, you know, that Iowa's in contention for anything like that. So that's kind of a pipe dream. I just don't see it. Anybody think Chris maybe tests the waters or not?
He'll be back, I think.
Yeah, Andy, you think so?
Well, I hope he doesn't because I think the NBA is probably looking at him like, man. You know, don't know why he's not playing, but look at his numbers. Look what he does when he's playing. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
That'd be a shame if he went.
Yeah. I mean.
I guarantee he'd get drafted, though.
Oh, he would. He definitely would.
Yeah, but I think he could really, if he comes back and has a real stellar year next year, that really, really will boost him up. But, I mean, you never know, right? But I do think Chris comes back next year.
Yeah, let's hope, anyway. I mean, if he doesn't, if they're both gone, yeah, then we see. What about, anybody think Connor stays for the COVID year? Anybody?
I'll go out on a limb and say, yeah, I think he does come back. If he can, I think he will. He's, you know, what, you know.
I'm out of the conversation.
I hope he doesn't, but I mean, you guys know I'm not a fan, but. Just that guy sitting behind me at the Big Ten tournament, every time Connor got the ball, he can't shoot. I got kind of tired of that.
Yeah. It looks like Mike's call dropped, so he must have dropped off. So T. Bodie's on, but I don't hear him. So T. Bodie, you still there? His phone's on, but he's not still talking and anything. So anyway, so Andy, What was the best part of the? I mean, is it the? Obviously, winning the thing was huge. But did you see us by any chance, I'm here, Mike's coming back in. Did you see the whole time? Was it a doubt in your mind, or did you think, like, at a certain point, when did you think, oh, we've got this game in the bag?
The championship game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought we were looking good the whole way, kind of in control, and, you know, foul trouble wasn't a major issue. And that just the fact that Toussaint was just wreaking havoc on them. I mean, some of the Purdue people were like, just couldn't believe the turnovers. Driving them nuts. But it was literally dominating, rebounding against a team that couldn't handle the ball. And that's what I think. Yeah. That's why I just don't think Purdue does well in the tournament. You got to be able to handle the ball and play defense and rebound. Yeah. They can do two of those three, but, man.
Yeah. So, Mike, you had dropped off. Do you think Connor stays?
Yeah, I was going to go out on a limb and say if he can come back, I think he will. You know, why not, right? I mean, you know, he's not going to go pro.
No. And he's not. I guess he's not on the baseball team anymore, from what I understand. I don't. No, I thought I saw somewhere that he is not on the baseball team right now. Well, frankly, I mean, they're going deeper each year, you know? I mean, it's baseball time that he's missing, so.
Well, you guys know there's a third one, too, right? I think
I did not.
Stop.
Yeah, there is a younger one. I can't remember his name, though. Yeah.
He might be the best of the three. He's a sophomore, I believe.
Is that right?
Freshman or sophomore.
Yeah. Anyone worried about Patrick, how he's doing right now in terms of his performance on the floor?
Yeah, I've been kind of up and down on him, you know. I will say this. He did have a pretty good game in the Indiana game. I think he had 16 points. The problem is I feel like he's the one guy when he's in that's like, makes the mistakes, is really turning the ball over some and just killing Iowa a little bit. And he's not quite what I would hope for is the force on the boards that we need, you know. And that, like, I agree with Indy Mac on that. It could be our Achilles heel if we don't rebound better. We were showing some signs of doing that, but the last couple games against Indiana and Purdue, we didn't do very well. So still won, though, so go figure.
Yeah. So, Indy, you weren't at the game where Bo Hannon hit the three, right?
No. I was at – we went Friday, and then that game was Saturday, but we had friends that are Indiana, huge Indiana fans, watched the game here at the house with them. But it was nice to be on the other end of one of those, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Did anybody see that guy that was posted on Hawkeye Report, that Indiana guy that did his live podcast? He said Indiana's 10 points better than Iowa basically any time of the year.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
And
go to Hawkeye
how did
Report.
Do against Iowa this year? 0-2, I believe.
Yeah,
well,
but he said, they're 10. And he's mad at Bo Hannon. He said, Grandpa Bo Hannon or whatever hits this shot. And, you know, I mean, he was just, it was
sounds
hilarious.
Like the Indiana basketball version of a Nebraska football fan.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, you know, Northwestern beating Nebraska that first day, I wonder if that helped things. Because remember, Nebraska was really hot coming into the tournament. A lot of people thought, you know, they could make some noise. I think that was a relief, so to speak, because I don't think Northwestern.
They beat two top tens in a row, and that's who we were going to play. So I was like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. That was huge. So anyway, so you were there to watch them cut down the nets, Indy?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I was actually videotaped some of it, and that was when we were kind of down by the pep band. It was really, really cool to see.
Yeah.
That might be the, you know, crown jewel of the season. You never know. Hopefully they do well in the tournament. But
yeah.
You know,
the last time we won the Big Ten tournament didn't turn out so well, if you'll remember. And the time before that, when we won it in 2001, I think we won a first round game and then lost in the second round. So, you know, I mean, I just
that 2001 game is one of the best memories I've ever had at a sports event. It was Luke Recker coming back to Indiana.
Yep.
Playing against Indiana. I mean, he had death threats. Remember, he left All-American Indiana kid goes to Arizona and transfers.
Arizona, yep.
Gets in the car accident and then decides to go back to Iowa, and it's a storybook. He's playing Iowa. He's playing against Indiana, and then, I mean, it's 80% Hoosier fans. And I was there with my son Kyle, was about 9 or 10. And I remember grabbing him, like, you know, record jumped out of bounds and called timeout in midair back when you could do that.
Yep.
And gave Iowa the ball. And I'm grabbing him and I said, they're going to get it to record and they're going to win the game. And
no,
sure
that
enough,
was,
man,
that was, that
awesome.
Wasn't the year that we won the Big Ten. That was the year we went to the final but lost to, I think, Ohio State. The year
was
we won 2001? It was
no.
Yeah, 2001 was Evans and Brody Boyd. And
we beat Ohio. 2006, we beat Ohio State.
No, no, I'm talking about 2002. The record year was 2002 because he was injured the latter part of 2001. So it was Evans, but then it was like Brody Boyd and – yeah, so 2002 was when Recker went on that streak where he beat Wisconsin and then Indiana, or maybe it was the reverse. He beat them both on last second shots. Both of them went to the video review or whatever. But yeah, and then they lost in the final to the Big Ten conference final at Ohio State and went to the NIT and didn't do real well there. But
that was great. Record, we were in the corner with all the Iowa section. He comes to the corner pulling up his Iowa part of his jersey. It was pretty cool.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's right. He started his career at Indiana, and that's right. And then what happened? He got in an accident, and it wasn't his father living in Iowa, so he went back there or something?
No,
like
I think
that.
It wasn't his girlfriend or something was from Iowa or something like that.
Well, he was in the accident with her, but
kind of
he moved there because of his father or something. But either way, it was a storybook.
Alford was the coach.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's let's try and not think about that.
he went to Arizona with Lute Olson, I believe.
Yeah.
And then the car accident happened. Then he got an extra year and decided to come back to Iowa, something like that.
Yeah, he got some kind of exemption.
Yeah, that's right.
So.
But that was
just
incredible.
By the way, whatever happened to Steve Alford? Is he coaching anywhere right now?
I thought I remember that he was at Nevada.
Okay.
But let me look, and I'll double check. He is currently, I thought he was at Nevada, but I could be wrong. Yeah, since 2019. Yeah, since 2019.
Boy,
they lost in the Mountain West to Boise State. So who knows? Who knows where he'll end up? I mean, he could. There's an article in their thing saying there are a few small tweaks from glory again. So, you know, that's he's still selling it. That's for sure. He just was not a fit in Iowa. You know, he just wasn't. I mean, from everything from the stories I heard
that was really bad was even when he had some decent teams, is his personality. He was just pissing the alumni off big time. I heard some things like at golf outings and stuff, just acting like a complete jerk. He did not mesh with the Iowa. The big contributors and the people that really cared about Iowa.
Yeah, exactly. Indy, you remember that time we were at the sports column when we were playing darts with Todd Birkenpass? I remember asking him if he was going to guard Alford, you know, sort of jokingly. And I remember at the time asking him, you know, he must be a. And he said, no, he's not a bad guy. I remember Birkenpass saying that. Saying, no, he's not a bad guy. You know, he's a pretty nice guy. I was, you know, so to hear that back then, and then to hear what a jackwagon he was when he got to Iowa City was just shocking to me. Because I guess he would go into retailers and just expect to be comped for everything.
There's a lot of stories about
they treated vendors like, you know, and service people at their house, and I guess Mrs. Alford was no big bargain either. And of course, the whole Pierce fiasco was just. You know, that embarrassed the university. And
that was kind of the final straw, I think,
Yeah,
There's a little college called Franklin College
fired.
Here, but
he
it's
left.
Near, it's about five miles. And his dad, Alford's dad, was an All-American there, Franklin College.
Sam Alford was?
Yeah, my son went to his Auburn's camp. He comes back there and did a camp. He brought Pierre Pierce and a couple other guys. I think Luke Reckner might have been there to run that.
Pierre Pierce, boy, that didn't end well for him. I mean, I don't know where he is now, but I think he's playing overseas, actually. So, anyway. Well, hey, guys, it's coming up on the end. So,
I just got to throw in there, since you're throwing out these names of the past, that Michael Payne did attend the 308 Ronalds party.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I missed that one. I missed that
the,
one.
The beach.
Which one?
Indy should be able to concur with that.
Well,
sure.
we had Birkenpass there too, because Jaws.
Did you guys ever get Chuck Long over?
No, but no. Remember, we ran into him at a couple parties with our roommates.
Yeah, we ran into a party the night after the Minnesota game when they went to the Rose Bowl thing. We were at this. Every girl was like all over him. I remember.
Yeah, exactly.
I played 2-on-2 against Chuck Long on that little school next to Ronald Street when we were there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't remember who I was with, but I'm just thinking, oh God, what if he comes steps on my foot and breaks his ankle? I'm gonna be run out of the stage. He was.
So, hey guys, got to cut it short because we're coming up on the end of time, and I want to thank everyone for being here. Thanks to you three for being Mike, Indy Hawk, and T Bodie. Thanks for Holger and Annie joining in late, Boyd and Vito in the chat room. Big Sister was on the phone. Sue was here earlier, and one number I didn't recognize, but hey, that happens. But thanks all for being here. Hey, if you got your brackets filled out and you didn't take our advice, don't yell at me next week if your brackets get busted. Meantime, hey, everyone have a great weekend. Have a great hope your teams do well. And, of course, go Hawks. So, hey, got to run. We're right up against it. Okay.
Talk
to you guys later.
Thanks.
That's it, folks. Have a great weekend. We are out.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.